Well, this idea of looking at the life of Christians that come before us really comes from Scripture itself in Hebrews. In the Hebrews chapter 11, there's kind of what they consider the great roll call of the faith, of the Jewish faith up until Christ, and showing the great heroes of the faith, showing faith in God and placing their faith in God and acting upon that faith, and how that was what the most important thing of their lives was about, was placing faith in God. And the encouragement then is, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, then we ourselves are called to throw off everything that might entangle us from walking the same kind of life they walked by their example. And so we're called to a deeper life in Christ, a life that is lived in not just the legacy of those who came before us, but the legacy of Jesus Christ. And then we become a part of that legacy ourselves. So I'm hoping twice a year, like I said earlier, that we'll look at the life of somebody who has come in the faith before us. Reformation Sunday will probably always be the Sunday we look at somebody from outside of the United States, somebody from world history. And so we're starting this with Dietrich Bonhoeffer today, but then around 4th of July sometime, depending on how things fall, we'll look at somebody who's an American Christian from American past, American history, who had an impact on Christianity. And so this morning we're looking at Dietrich because, well, he's my favorite person in all of Christian history. He has an incredible life testimony, made only stronger by the fact that his life was lived out in his theology so perfectly that he sacrificed himself, essentially, for the good of other people, and ended up killed by the Nazi regime in a concentration camp because of his beliefs and because of his standing firm in Jesus Christ to reject what the Nazi regime was doing in Germany. And so Dietrich is a theologian I've actually picked as being kind of the theologian of my life. I was at a friend's ordination, and his dad challenged him during the charge for his ordination. He said, pick one book of the Bible and become an expert in it, and pick one theologian and become an expert in that theologian. And I really liked that idea, and so I picked the Gospel of John, which we're going to be going through starting in Advent for the rest of this next year, and I picked Dietrich Bonhoeffer. So I'm selfish. That's why we're looking at Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Well, what does it mean to create a legacy? Well, Dietrich seemed to think that there was a cost to being a disciple. In fact, he has a book called The Cost of Discipleship, and it's what we're going to really be focusing on and looking at today, several quotes from that book about what does it cost to be a disciple of Jesus Christ. And we saw that the passage from Luke, that Jesus himself said that you need to count the cost of what it's going to be to become a disciple of mine. And I think that so often we emphasize the grace of Jesus Christ, the free grace of Jesus Christ as a gift given to all that we might receive it, that sometimes we minimize the fact that taking that gift costs everything. Everything we hold dear and everything we love becomes sacrificed to live into the grace of Jesus Christ. And so Dietrich says this, or Hebrews 12, well, we already looked at that. Dietrich says this, costly grace is the gospel which must be sought again and again and again, the gift which must be asked for, the door at which a man must knock. Such grace is costly because it calls us to follow. And it is grace because it calls us to follow Jesus Christ. It is costly because it costs a man his life, and it is grace because it gives a man the only true life. It is costly because it condemns sin, and in grace because it justifies the sinner. Above all, it is costly because it cost God the life of his Son. You were bought with a price. And what has cost God so much cannot be cheap for us. Above all, it is grace because God did not reckon his Son too dear a price to pay for our life, but delivered him up for us. Costly grace is the incarnation of God. Dietrich's whole principle behind the fact that it's costly to be a disciple starts with the price that we don't pay, but the price that God paid on our behalf, that you might live in the grace of Jesus Christ and as his disciple. And what a great price that God paid, that he sent his only Son to live a life among us, to be affected by the brokenness of our sin, and then ultimately to be put upon the cross and to suffer the punishment that you and I deserve for our sake. A cost that God paid on our behalf. And then, well, how do we respond? 10%. Where in Scripture is there an idea of 10% of tithing? Well, in the Old Testament, the old laws of giving sacrifices to the temple, regularly they would sacrifice a tenth of whatever the harvest they would bring in, and they would bring in tenth from their storehouses, and they would give it to God for the temple work. That's where we get the idea of 10%. And yet, Christians, statistically, of givers in churches, don't even give 10%. In regular churches and across the United States, Christians give somewhere between 2.5% and 5% of their income to the church, which is fine, because it's a lot of money. I think it's something like $50 billion that just 2.5% to 5% of the United States church giving. It's a lot of money. We're a very wealthy people. But that's not what the gospel calls us to. That's not what Christ calls us to. The New Testament is clear that 10% is not some kind of example. Well, it's not clear. It's not even there. And in fact, the calls of Jesus Christ and the calls of the early church and the examples of the early church is that 100%, 100% is what you dedicate to God. 100% is what you give back to God. 100% of your time, your talents, your resources are not yours. They're God's. How do you use them? For the glorification of Christ, for the lifting up of his name in the world, that others might be set free by the gospel. Dietrich says this. He says, it is only the call of Jesus which makes it a situation where faith is possible. A situation where faith is possible can never be demonstrated from the human side. Discipleship is not an offer man makes to Christ. It is only the call which creates the situation. Christ has called for all of you, not a portion of you. We saw it in the Luke passage. He said, unless you give up everything, you cannot be my disciple. He didn't say, unless you come and give 10% on a regular basis, or 2.5% or 5%. He said, unless you give up everything for my sake. So Dietrich Bonhoeffer lived in the United States for a while. He came over on an invitation from Union Seminary in New York City, and he lived in Harlem for a while. And he loved the United States. He found incredible freedom here, and he made incredible friendships with African-American Christians in New York City and Harlem. And he loved being a part of the churches there. And he later talked about how his prized possession was his record collection that he had bought while he was in the United States. They were all African-American spirituals. And he would listen to them regularly in the seminary that he later created in Germany. And all the other Germans wondered why he liked the music so much. It was so different from anything they had in Germany. But he loved the United States. And more than that, he was safe in the United States. In fact, part of the invitation to get him to come and teach at Union was to keep him out of Nazi Germany, where they knew it was going to be dangerous and maybe cost him his life to stay there. And so in the United States, he was safe. And yet one night, he had a dream. He had a dream and he saw the suffering of the people in Germany. And he felt God's call to return, to be a beacon of light, to be a beacon of hope, and to stand against the evils that were happening in Germany. And so Dietrich responded to that call, immediately bought a ticket back, and he got on the next boat to go back over to Europe. And over the years, many, many people tried to get Dietrich to leave because Dietrich had become a central figure of Christianity in the 20th century. He had become one of the most important theologians that was alive. And everybody wanted to save him from what fate it seemed like would be his end if he stayed in Germany. And so people kept offering, come over here, come to us, and we'll protect you. And Dietrich regularly told them, no, I'm called here. You see, Dietrich got the idea that it's not a bargain with God. Well, you know, okay, you bless my life, and I'll give you 10% of mine. I'll give you 10% of my time. I'll give you 10% of my thoughts. I'll give you 10% of my income. I'll give you 10% of this. That's not what's in Dietrich's mind. Dietrich's mind is, whatever you call me to, I'm 100% in, Jesus, in response to you. And so that's what Dietrich did. He says this, he says, so long as Levi sits at the receipt of custom and Peter at his nets, they could both pursue their trade honestly and dutifully, and they might both enjoy religious experiences, old and new. But if they want to believe in God, the only way is to follow his incarnate Son. Had Levi stayed at his post, Jesus might have been his present help in trouble, but not the Lord of his whole life. Now, Dietrich is really careful to say that he's not calling everybody to leave their jobs and to become a minister or to go over into the mission field or to put yourself in dangerous situations. That is not what Dietrich is calling you to. But Dietrich is saying that if you want to have Christ as your Lord, then everything in your life needs to be under his lordship. It's not a bargain to say, well, I'll give you a little bit now, and then you know, you bless me later. It's 100%. How do you serve Christ at work? How do you serve Christ in retirement on the golf course? How do you serve Christ in your relationships with your friends and your family? How do you serve Christ in your church community? Everything is a relationship with you and Christ and the other thing. Christ is between the mediator of all things. So we see Paul in Philippians willing to sacrifice his own life for the sake of the gospel. He's preached the gospel to the Gentiles as a call. It's what God called him to do. And so he responded with 100% of everything that he had. And he went out and he served, and yet his service got him arrested and put in jail. And he thought that there was a chance that he might be killed, that he might be beheaded for his work for the gospel. And yet his response, as he writes to the Philippian church who is worried about him, he says, "For I know that through your prayers and the help of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, this will turn out for my deliverance. As it is my eager expectation and hope that I will not be at all ashamed, but that with full courage, now as always, Christ will be honored in my body, whether by life or by death. For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain." Paul got it. Paul understood 100% of his life was Jesus's, and for what Jesus wants for him to do. And so he gave himself over to Jesus. I want to ask this question. What if God only gave 10% for you? What if Jesus only went 10% of the way to the cross? He only lived 10% of a human life. He only resurrected 10%. Would we even be sitting here in this room, worshiping together? Would you have found the redemption that you have found in Jesus Christ if God only gave you 10%? God gave you 100%, blessed you with 100% of salvation in Jesus Christ at a great cost to himself. So how do we bear our cross? Because we saw it in the Luke passage, unless you pick up your cross. But here's another way to look at it from Matthew. Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. You could put anything in the place of father or mother. And whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. What's your cross? What is the burden that Christ has called you to carry on behalf of him in this world? What is the cross that you must pick up that is hard to endure, that will cost you? And have you been willing to pick that up? It might be that even though your pride has been hurt and somebody has deeply angered you or frustrated you or hurt you in some way, your cross may be to forgive them, despite how they've treated you. To let go of the burden of that bitterness and anger and frustration and the desire for revenge, and look at them with new eyes of compassion and forgiveness. You know, Dietrich wrote letters from prison, and regularly in them, he prayed for the prison guards who kept him in prison, that God would bless them, that God would bless their family lives. Here's a man with his freedom taken away from him from doing what is right, and the men who were set to guard him in prison, Dietrich loved them, showed them the grace of God, prayed for them, and shared the gospel with them on a daily basis. Dietrich says this in The Cost of Discipleship. But then discipleship, talking about if you make grace cheap, then discipleship is no longer discipleship, but a program of our own to be arranged to suit ourselves and to be judged in accordance with the standards of a rational ethic. Discipleship can tolerate no conditions which might come between Jesus and our obedience to him. Discipleship can tolerate no conditions which might come between Jesus and our obedience to him. Well, God, I'll serve you everywhere, but not with those youth. Or not in Sunday school. I don't really want to go to Sunday school. I'll serve you everywhere, but you know, when I'm in school and my friends are doing something that looks cool and it'll make me popular, I'm going to do that too. I'm just going to ignore the fact that it's probably against your will in that moment. When I'm at work, I'm going to skirt that ethical line so that I can get ahead just a little bit more. Because ultimately, that gives me more money and I can give more money to the church or whatever else. Discipleship can tolerate nothing that would come as a wedge between you and your obedience to Christ. Where are you at in your obedience to Christ? Ultimately, it's only possible for you to be a disciple because Jesus came and became a human. And so Dietrich put it this way. He said, it's only because he became like us that we can become like him. Christ must be the center of all you do and all that you are. Seek after Christ. Desire after Christ more than anything else. Desire obedience to Christ more than anything else. And you might just create a legacy that lasts. Now, as we think about a legacy that lasts, we look at Hebrews 11, and it is a roll call of the faith, but we must pay attention to the fact that it is not a roll call of perfection. This passage has always bugged me, because it lifts up high all these great heroes of the faith, and yet we know the stories of these heroes, and we know that they were not always faithful. They made mistakes. And so let's look at some of the people that Hebrews 11 looks at. Abraham, a liar. Abraham regularly said that his wife was his sister. Not quite a total lie. It was a little bit of a white lie because she was his half-sister. But he did it out of fear and protection for himself because she was so beautiful. And when he was in a foreign land in Egypt, he thought that the Pharaoh might take her as his wife and kill Abraham so that he might be able to take her. Abraham showed a complete lack of faith in God to protect him in the ways that God had called him out and to live in the world. He lied to protect himself. What about Moses? Moses was a murderer. He believed that since the people of Israel were being oppressed, that he should step in, and he actually killed an Egyptian guard to protect Israel and had to flee from Israel into the wilderness in fear for his life because Pharaoh might have acted in retribution to him for killing one of his guards. Moses, a murderer. What about Rahab? Rahab's mentioned in this, a prostitute. A woman who lives not in a faithful relationship with a husband, instead sells her body for money. She's the one who responds in faith to God by protecting the spies who had come into the land to see the land that God had promised them. What about David? An adulterer and a murderer. A man who took a wife of one of his soldiers for his own, and then in fear, after she became pregnant, tried to get Uriah to come home and be with his wife so that it wouldn't look like she had had an affair. And when that didn't work, he sent Uriah to the front lines of the battle so that Uriah would surely be killed and would be taken out of the equation. None of them were perfect. None of them were perfect. We're not asking for perfection. Jesus isn't asking for perfection. He's asking for faith in him, belief in him that permeates 100% of your life. And that means that even when you make mistakes, even when you don't give all that you should give and you recognize it, that you come in repentance and you ask for forgiveness, knowing that Christ is free and desires to give you forgiveness. What would it have been like if Dietrich lived? You know, we have a whole lot of his books that are kind of truncated versions because he was writing them when he was in the concentration camp. And one of his students and closest friends took those and kind of edited them up and finished some of them from some lectures that he had done. But we might have had 50, 60, 70, 100 more books from Dietrich, thinking and challenging the church to be better than it had been. But his life was cut short because he had chosen to fight for what was right and to stand up for his faith. He was placed in a concentration camp. And just weeks before the war was going to end, when Hitler was most desperate, he went around and he began killing the most high-profile prisoners he had just to spite everybody. And so Dietrich's family, who were hiding away in Britain at the time, heard over the BBC news that Dietrich was found dead in a concentration camp, freed just days after he was killed. So Dietrich's life was cut short. What would it have been like if he had lived? Well, we could hypothesize all kinds of things, but I think Dietrich's legacy is more deeply felt and more important and impactful for us because he chose not to let anything come between his obedience to Christ and him. Because he obeyed 100%. Because he responded with faith. Because he put his life in the hands of Jesus Christ. His legacy, his story, carries so much more meaning than all the books he could have written. As we sit in this building, and we think of the legacy of this church and those who sacrificed greatly that this church might not just have a building and have programs and exist in Dearborn, but that this church would have an impact on Dearborn. It is our duty to respond to their faith with our own faith in Jesus Christ. To choose to extend that legacy far beyond our own lives by giving more than we've given in the past. I'm not talking about money. I don't care about your money. We could use some money, but but forget all that. Your time, your life in showing Christ's light outside of these walls, that's what's going to create a legacy far beyond any money you could give to the church. Paul said, "Only let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or am absent, I may hear of you that you are standing firm in one spirit with one mind, striving side by side for the faith of the gospel." Are we as a church living our life worthy of the gospel of Jesus Christ? Are we living in that way, that manner? Are we loving one another and treating one another with the kind of respect Christ calls us to? That his gospel might go out from this place. Dietrich challenges us, and he says this: earthly goods are given to be used, not to be collected. In the wilderness, God gave Israel the manna every day, and they had no need to worry about food and drink. Indeed, if they kept any of the manna over until the next day, it went bad. In the same way, the disciple must receive his portion from God every day. If he stores it up as a permanent possession, he spoils not only the gift, but himself as well. For he sets his heart on accumulated wealth and makes it a barrier between himself and God. Where our treasure is, there is our trust, our security, our consolation, and our God. Hoarding is idolatry. And yet in our country, storage units are a huge booming industry. This Sunday is a Sunday where we're recognizing a choice to pledge what we might give in the next year. We call it Stewardship Sunday. And you are all sent a card in the mail, and the card asks you to prayerfully ask God what he's calling you to in the next year. Some of you maybe have done that, and we're going to take offering in a second here. And if you are ready and you have that card, feel free to place that card in the offering plate. But if you're not, please take time this week to prayerfully consider what God is calling you to this next year. Not just in the giving of money, but in the giving of your time and of your gifts and of all the things that God has given to you. To think not just of the giving out of some kind of sense of obligation or guilt or shame, but think of giving in obedience and in joy to watch what Christ might do with what you give. Think about the person in your office who needs to know Christ, and you've held back from sharing with them because you're afraid of how it might affect your relationship or your appearance in the office. And maybe this week as you pray and you fill out that card, maybe your sacrifice, maybe your cross is going to be, I'm going to share Christ with that person this year. And that's wonderful. Write it on there and put it in the offering. If you don't have it this week, pray this week about it, and next week come back and be willing to pledge and give to God 100% of your life. Not 10%, not 2%, not 90%, 100% of what God has given to you. Give back to him.